This is AMDA On The Go, your gateway to expert discussions, journal article reviews, and innovation in post-acute and long-term care. AMDA On The Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now here's our host for AMDA On The Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On The Go. This podcast will focus on Clostridioides difficile infections in post-acute and long-term care. The Centers for Disease Control paint a dismal picture regarding the burden of infection in long-term care. 1 to 3 million serious infections occur every year and are a major cause of hospitalization and death, with nearly 400,000 people dying of infections in long-term care yearly. With regard to one type of infection, in 2016, the taxonomy may have changed from the genus Clostridium to Clostridioides, but the dramatic impact of Clostridioides difficile infections, commonly known as C. diff or CDI, remains unparalleled in our healthcare continuum as the main cause of nosocomial antibiotic-associated diarrhea in developed countries. In fact, a 2015 New England Journal study looked at the burden of CDI in hospitals, nursing facilities, and communities in the United States and found that the risks of CDI infection and death increased with age, caused nearly 500,000 infections in a single year, 29,000 deaths within 30 days of CDI diagnosis, with 15,000 of those deaths thought directly attributable to CDI. 2 out of 3 CDI infections were in patients 65 years or older, and that age group represented more than 80% of the deaths. And in a January 2018 Clinical Infectious Diseases report by Zhang and others, the healthcare resource utilization and costs of CDI and recurrent CDI was determined to be as high as $37,000 per patient. With a focus on reviewing the latest recommendations regarding CDI epidemiology, diagnosis, treatment, infection prevention, and environmental management, a panel representing the Infectious Diseases Society of America, IDSA, and the Society for Healthcare Epidemiology of America, SHEA, published a 2018 guideline simply called Clostridium difficile. The guideline concluded by noting how much we don't know about CDI, including the biology of the spores, their relationship to the gastrointestinal tract, colonization, and the generation of microbiome resistance to CDI. Like everything else in medicine these days, it's complicated. How do we reduce the incidence of CDI? What do we need to focus on in diagnosis and treatment, most specifically in our elderly population, and in places that have the greatest density of elders, like our nursing facilities? The long-term care setting is often seen as the incubator for CDI, but is it really? Are long-term care facilities to blame for the ongoing onslaught of CDI? Fundamentally, how well do we understand this unique population? Well, geriatrician, researcher, and educator Dr. Milta Little takes on these questions with a deeper dive into the long-term care population and CDI connection with her 2018 Annals of Long-Term Care article entitled Treating and Preventing Clostridium difficile Infection in Long-Term Care Facilities. And we are fortunate to have Dr. Little here with us now. Dr. Milta Little is a geriatrician and associate professor of medicine, formerly with St. Louis University in St. Louis, Missouri. She's a past recipient of the Geriatric Academic Career Award, Geriatric Fellowship Director, and has been a medical director at a number of skilled nursing facilities. She has well over 20 publications in the field of geriatrics. And in November of this past year, 2018, she won the Outstanding Alumnus Award from the Department of Natural and Applied Sciences at Evangel University. Dr. Little, welcome to AMDA On The Go.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here today.
Dr. Little, you are recognized, especially within the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care, as a consummate educator in geriatric medicine, with your publications focusing on understanding dementias, over-medication and polypharmacy, geriatric assessment, and nutrition, to just mention a few. You're not a specialist in infectious disease, but you focus your attention now on CDI. Number of questions to start. What drew you to the topic? With other resources readily available, why did you think it was important to provide the geriatrician's viewpoint, so to speak, on CBI? And really, lead us through your article. How is the long-term care setting unique or require special considerations in this discussion around CDI?
Very interesting questions. So in terms of what drew me to the topic, I was asked to write for the Annals of Long-Term Care in the tip sheets, and I was told you can pick basically anything. And one of the things I like to do when I am offered that opportunity is to pick something that I personally sometimes struggle with in my clinical practice, that I think I would love to learn more about this, and I really think that I could teach others how to handle this topic a little bit better. And so that's why I think it's important to be able to provide my viewpoint, because as an academic geriatrician, I feel like I can be a really good bridge between the research part of what's happening, the literature that's published, and also the clinicians that are in the trenches. One of the things I really like about being a teacher is that I can take some of these topics and really boil it down to what are the things that we have to know to be able to take care of patients the best way possible. So in terms of how I laid out the article, I really wanted it to be something that could be useful at the bedside. And so I wanted to just keep it simple and just talk about what exactly is CDI, who is at risk, how do we identify it? And then what is the best way to treat it and prevent it from spreading to other people? And so that's how I really laid out the article and then provided some really high point salient things that could just be taken to any facility, shared with nursing staff, shared with other members of the interprofessional team, and hopefully make an impact in improving the outcomes in relation to CDI.
And what makes long-term care so unique in this setting around this question of CDI in your viewpoint?
So long-term care is a very interesting setting because you have a combination. I always tell learners that are with me that this is kind of a combination of a hospital setting and a clinic setting where you have people who are living here, or at least they're residing there for an extended period of time, and they're often quite sick or have multiple chronic medical problems. And so we're therefore a much higher risk of developing conditions such as CDI. But at the same time, we're managing all of these chronic things like we would do in a clinic setting. So it's very unique where we have sick people cohorted together in one place that are also chronic at the same time. So we're managing chronic conditions and acute illnesses all in one place. Right. So that makes managing infectious diseases that are highly contagious a bit of a challenge. It is also unique because CDI tends to be a higher risk factor in this setting. I think because of all those things I mentioned, multimorbidity, polypharmacy, cohorting people together. So once somebody gets it, then it tends to pass around pretty quickly. And so just being a resident of long-term care puts people at risk of getting a CDI infection.
You know, let's get into the meat of it a little bit. You know, the CDI guideline that I mentioned above, their panel report discussed some pretty complex factors and really serves more as a reference for all matters around CDI than, you know, what you're talking about, you know, a go-to or how-to source. I think that our JOAMDAs, so to speak, as I'm fond of saying, in the trenches could get lost in the guideline granularity. So from your perspective, in the post-acute and long-term care setting, what are the essentials that our fellow providers need to think about regarding CDI, especially looking at the spectrum of care, infection control, antibiotic stewardship, CDI surveillance, testing, and treatment?
So to be honest, I got a little lost in the granularity when I was looking all of this up to write up this article as well, because there is still so much controversy, especially when it comes to the diagnosis of CDI. So these guidelines and reports and publications are so important to base what we do in the clinical setting, but we can't hang our hat on all of it because it doesn't necessarily help us to pull out the guideline when I have one person or three people who have just developed diarrhea in the nursing home. So what I tried to do was to take that and again, take off my academic hat, put on my clinical hat and say, okay, what is it that I really need in the trenches? And I think what's most important is being able to, one, know what your laboratory is testing. We have had instances where we thought they were testing one way and we were getting something back completely different. So knowing what is the laboratory testing, and if you don't understand why they're doing that, what they're doing, talk to the medical director of the facility and or the lab to try to figure out why are we doing this algorithm in this way. The other thing is really working with the other members of the team in the long-term care setting, because there are certain fundamental infection control practices that we can put into place as a team that frankly can prevent a lot of these issues where we wouldn't even necessarily have to do all of the testing if we were just really, really good at preventing this illness. And that takes a team-based approach with the nursing staff, with the therapy staff, with everybody from the administrator down to anybody who walks in the door.
Can you give an example of, let's say, with the nursing staff, what type of advocacy you'd be looking for with regard to testing appropriately?
I think really helping them to understand what is CDI and when do we need to be concerned and ask for testing. So one of the things in the guidelines that I think is really important is that they say you don't test if somebody has had laxatives in the last 24 hours. So that's something that the nursing staff can help communicate to providers to say this person does not take anything or this person does take something. So that's one example. Another example would be, which is probably going to be my forever biggest campaign in this setting, is hand washing. And that's the biggest impact that we can make. Appropriate environmental cleaning, but first and foremost, hand washing. Just wash your hands every time you go see somebody. And if they have diarrhea, use soap and water, even if it ends up being from the laxative they took that morning. It's a simple thing that takes 2 extra minutes that can really make a big impact down the line.
Our interview will continue after this brief message from the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Among all charitable organizations, our foundation uniquely advances the interests of PALTC professionals by working to develop and expand our workforce and by focusing on innovation and quality improvement. Your contributions to the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine make a big difference. Please make a contribution today through our website or by calling the AMDA office.
We're talking with Dr. Milta Little about Clostridioides difficile colitis, or CDI, in the post-acute and long-term care setting. Dr. Little, as a segue to the last question, one of the core competencies for medical directorship is developing quality assurance and process improvement, QAPI, plans. One would think that understanding details around incidence and prevalence of CDI in our facilities and options around testing would be crucial to the overall recognition of a facility's commitment to quality care. And you just mentioned, got to talk to the medical director. Well, the medical director has to have some foundation as well. You know, I know that my own institution found that just because we could do detailed CDI testing, typically I'm referring to PCR testing, didn't mean that we should. We were testing way too much with too sensitive of a test, the polymerase chain reaction, as I said, and scoring an abundance of false positives that in turn were being treated. Where can we start in a CDI QAPI project, or at least begin a discussion as medical directors looking at transitions of care and facility policies, and of course from the administrator you talked about, the star ratings?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the biggest thing is understanding who really needs to be tested. We get into these conversations about how do we test and what tests to choose, and then we get all lost in the granularity, as we talked about before, when really what we should be focusing on is who really needs to be tested. Because if you start with the person who is the highest likelihood of having a CDI, and we test that person, it almost doesn't matter which test we use because it's going to be more accurate. That's where you have a really high pre-test probability of disease.
Right.
Then it doesn't matter if you use the PCR or the two-step toxin test because you're more likely to get a valuable answer. So knowing the highest risk people, those are going to be people that have either been in the hospital, been exposed to somebody with CDI, recently had antibiotics, or have a lot of other risk factors for developing CDI, who also have had more than three or more loose stools in 24 hours, who have not been on laxatives. Mm-hmm. Those people are the ones that are going to be at higher risk. So instead of saying, oh, here's a person who had diarrhea, test for CDI, or there's a person who is exposed, let's go ahead and test their stool. We right. have to know who the person is, choose the appropriate person, and only test those. And then I think we would really lower the amount of inappropriate testing. And in fact, there was a recent article done in the hospital that showed just that. When they limited to the people who actually filled those diagnoses, they significantly reduced unnecessary testing.
That sounds like a lot of education that medical directors have to, or even attending physicians have to kind of take on to talk to the team about this very important pre-test probability consideration.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's something that has to start with the medical director.
Yeah.
And a lot of attending physicians and advanced practitioners, when they get called in the middle of the night and they get asked, and I will put my hand up high in the air as well.
Mine too.
If they get called and asked, hey, can we get a C. diff specimen? The answer is yes. So it's not just educating the attending physicians and the advanced practitioners, but also the frontline staff to understand what is the appropriate person that we need to identify for testing.
Right.
So it is a huge thing, and that's why it's a good COPPY project, because it's going to take multiple steps of education and going through the rapid cycle and to really see a difference here.
If I can talk about recurrence just for a second. So how do you approach the recurrent issue? So especially when talking about your staff. So we know that 1 out of 5 folks with CDI are going to have a recurrence, and it could happen within the month for all we know. What specific information, especially from your tip sheet and from the guidelines, would you tell teams to look for, watch for, or address with regard to recurrence possibilities?
So with recurrent disease, those are the people that are the hardest to manage. And so we have to be able to identify those people so that we can start appropriate treatment early.
Right.
And that is also why it's really important that we're not just testing everybody after they completed their treatments, because the PCR test that you mentioned before, which has the highest rate of detecting a CDI, will also remain positive even after somebody has received adequate treatment. Right. So we don't just go around testing everybody after they finish their antibiotics. We really need to reserve that for people who have completed their course and then have a recurrence of symptoms. But again, they have to fill that criteria where it's basically the same type of infection. And you can test again, but if it really is right away where they start having symptoms, for that first recurrence, you can go ahead and just treat them again with another round of antibiotics and see if they respond. And that can also help to reduce unnecessary testing. So critical point really that I tried to make in the article is we don't repeat testing for people who don't have recurrent symptoms. But then if they do have recurrent symptoms, you want to test again, because it could be something else that is causing the problem, and you want to make sure that it isn't still positive. So, but only treat within the second round of antibiotics if they have symptoms, not just a positive test.
Right. And I have to say that the tip sheet is fantastic. And
thank you.
We'll have references listed, but I would definitely suggest that folks take a look at the tip sheet and keep it handy, because it definitely outlines exactly a great pathway of approaching this infection. Dr. Little, as has been customary in the time that we have remaining, I wish to be a little provocative with you. I recall one of my first most impactful experiences with CDI as a new geriatrician. An elder in senior housing developed diarrhea. She hadn't been hospitalized or exposed to antibiotics. She was found to have CDI. She became septic and she died. And I got to tell you, and I know you could share the same, seeing more and more elders who become septic from this and die. So we now know that just being an elder alone is a risk factor for CDI. You know, I have to ask you, are we going to win this battle against CDI, or at least have a fighting chance? You know, you identify the long-term care setting as a unique environment, and we talked about hand washing and environmental attention. Is this really going to help reduce the incidence or prevalence of CDI? You know, in your opinion, moving forward, what other considerations are we going to need to make to ebb the tide of infection, to get long-term care settings off the radar if possible? And what system role could a post-acute and long-term care provider like us and all of our colleagues out there play in reducing this impact of CDI?
I think that it comes down to the basics. We try to make all of these too complicated. The scarier the disease and the worse the possible outcome, the more complex we try to make it. And I want to offer a glimmer of hope, because I think that this is actually a simple disease to control. One, hand washing. I will say that over and over and over again, soap and water can significantly reduce transmission rates. Two, appropriate environmental cleaning. And we recently had an outbreak, a true CDI outbreak in one of our facilities. And our housekeeping manager said, we have the C. diff cleaning agents, then they're appropriate. Well, we looked at how they were mixing it, and they weren't mixing it correctly. So we did a very rapid cycle. We, you know, started mixing the products correctly, and voila, our outbreak ended. Mm. So environmental cleaning appropriately done, which doesn't actually add more time, it just needs the right chemicals, can really reduce the risk of transmission of CDI. Those are the simple things that we need to do. The more complex thing, which is also going back to the basics, is appropriate antibiotic stewardship. Because we all have stories of the person who got CDI and was hospitalized or had a severe outcome such as a death, who was not exposed to antibiotics, but they were exposed to somebody else who was inappropriately given antibiotics and got CDI. Mm. And so we need to really, really be mindful of how we're using antibiotics and approach it with as much caution as we do any other medication, such as an opioid or a medication that's centrally acting that could cause somebody to fall. Antibiotics are just as dangerous when they're used inappropriately. Wow. And so that's a system change that's really big and can be complex. But if as individuals, we just go back to those basics, we can make a huge impact.
We have been fortunate to speak with and learn from Dr. Milta Little regarding considerations around CDI in the post-acute and long-term care setting based on her December 2018 article in the Annals of Long-Term Care. Dr. Little, thank you for spending your time with AMDA On The Go.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
References for this podcast can be found at paltc.podbean.com. Until next time, I'm Dr. Wayne Saltzman for this innovation podcast that we call AMDA On The Go.
Support for this broadcast is provided by the Foundation for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM, pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, please email cmd@paltc.org with your name and the podcast title. Thank you.